Hi, I'm Steph. I'm really thrilled to be here, and I have to remember to walk backwards. There you go. Thank you to Aaron and Kelly for bringing me here. I'm super excited to be here. So actually, for the most of this talk, I'm not going to be talking about user experience at all, but instead focusing on a very specific area of storytelling. The original title for this particular session was actually this. I did this in France a little while ago, but I thought, you know, with memes going in updating, so this is a new version of this talk. I wasn't sure how that was going to go down, but there you go. So I'm going to cheat and tell you where the accent comes from, because otherwise you spend the next 25 minutes wondering where I come from, and I would rather that you listen to what I have to say rather than my trying to figure out where I come from. So if you know where orangutans come from, okay, not that I have a close relationship with orangutans in particular, but we share the same island, and there was plenty enough room for all of us. And so I was from the island of Borneo, from Malaysia and Borneo. I didn't live there for very long. I spent my formative years in Australia, down the bottom of the world. I got tired of staying at the bottom of the world, and I about moved just about as far as I could with the sanity of choosing six-month-long winters in Canada. And now I have perpetually grey weather in the UK, and so much so that I forget to pack my sunglasses everywhere I go because I can't remember what it's like to have sun anymore. So my accent's going to switch from whatever to whatever in the next little while, and that's where it goes. Anyway, so last spring, I was in the south of France. I forgot my sunglasses that time, but hey. I was in Avignon, which is an interesting town in its own right. Something like 1309 to 1377, this is the home to the popes, because there was some kind of upheaval in European politics. In any case, I was there for a conference, and it was a front-end conference, and it was a city that still has its old walls. I like city with old walls, and I was really happy to find this place, which is an Airbnb place, very, very close to sort of the northern edge of the wall. I thought, oh, this is fantastic. Now, the reason why I do Airbnb a lot is because I like kitchens. I like going to a random city, showing up at a random supermarket or a market, because in Europe, most of the time it's markets, and sometimes they're like tiny little supermarkets, and figuring out what the local people eat. I like cooking my own meals while I'm on the go. And so I was quite happy that there's this nice modern kitchen that I get to use for a few days, which, you know, I'm not sort of selling Airbnb as a service, but I really enjoy it. So anyhow, the owner wasn't there because he was down in Spain working. And so his friend showed me around, let me in. I thought, great, no, I've got a few days of this to myself. And so that night, I made myself a nice little dinner. I was washing up. And this was like, you know, when you sit in this thing and you wash up, you do this, right? And all of a sudden, my socks started getting wet. Now, if you haven't had the experience of your socks getting wet without expecting it, I highly recommend you trying it, because it's one of those experiences you'll never forget. So what happened was my socks were getting wet, and there was a puddle of water coming right down to the middle of the room. I was like, okay, this is not good. And so so the sink was leaking somehow, but wasn't obviously where. And under the sink, this is what it looked like. some very creative plumbing. So I couldn't figure it out, but there was a bucket, so you can see the sort of the red rim thing underneath there. So I pushed it a little bit and stop the water from going on the floor, and I started looking for every single towel in the kitchen so I could wipe it down, did all that, was running out of paper towels at that point. So I called Jean, who's the guy who let me in, and said, we've got a bit of a problem in the kitchen. Do you think you can come around and have a look at it? He goes, I can come on tomorrow around lunchtime. I'm like, okay, I'm supposed to be at this conference, right? And thought, okay, all right then. So I unplugged the fridge because I kind of didn't want to die that night. I stuck a little paper towels underneath that little gap because there was water underneath there, and you don't really want the floor to rot. I simply don't want to be responsible for someone else's rotting kitchen, basically. Anyhow, went to sleep. In the morning, I forgot that the sink was leaking. I got my socks wet a second time. Anyway, so went to the conference, came back, la Jeanne, and everything, all that. So we looked at this. And so I'm pointing this way because that's kind of too far for me to reach. Okay, so you've got the water coming down. And it needs to feel that pressure bit in the middle, and it would just sort of flow down the drain on that side. But what you can't see from that photo is that there's actually a hole in the back. And obviously, unless you know the piping system, you wouldn't know it. But Jean figured that out because he found a roll of tape that has fallen off, and it was just sort of tape up at the back. And that was the only thing that was stopping this thing from leaking up to this point. So we were trying, like, okay, now what do we do? So he goes, some roll of paper we could do in his... I can't do a French accent very well. Some roll of paper. No, that's German, sorry. He stuck it into... we were trying to figure out now whether we can get some roll of newspaper or something to stuff it. It would get wet, but it would sort of expand and fill a hole. But we were in a French household. You get stuff like this. And so that's how we fix the sink. So, I want you to stop for 1 second and look at yourself and think about what you've just heard for the last 5 minutes. I have all of your attention because every single one of you are looking at me except for one guy at the back. Stories are immensely powerful. I taught you nothing. I taught you how to fix a sink in a French kitchen when the plumbing is creative. But what stories are, they are simulators for the brain, flight simulators for the brain. And this is really one of my favorite quotes from Made to Stick. There's a reason why our brains are wired for stories. We're physiologically done that way. It's very, very close to two main ways that we learn. So we learn, we learn in creative ways, but sort of the cognitive psychology behind it, there are two main methods, whether it's procedural learning or declarative learning. So declarative learning is when you have facts that you have to memorize, not very exciting. Procedural is when you ride a bike. So you know how we always say that you don't usually forget how to ride a bike? That's because it's something that's implicit in how we learn. And stories allow us to sort of simulate in our brain as we hear a story. So anyway, you've just learned how to fix a sink. So I did a test at this conference. So I had friends who, at this particular conference, to some people I told them the story much like what I told you. With other folks, I said, the Airbnb apartment I'm staying in had a leak in the sink. And that's all I said. This is rather boring. It's a fact. And the result of that test was the next day, the people whom I told the stories to actually asked me how was my kitchen. Because they remembered it, they lived through it with me. Whereas the people whom I told the anecdotal version have absolutely no recollection that I had a leaking sink at all and that I was sort of like going like, crisis. Anyhow, but I wasn't always a good storyteller, and you can argue that I probably am not that good at it yet. I feel like I'm still learning. I had to learn it. There is this kind of special thing we like to think that we can sort of nail stories down into a certain structure, and maybe there is, but there's a little bit more to the craft. I want to share don't play yet. I want to share this video with you. Have you seen this before? Good, excellent. Okay, let's see if the tag gods are with us, and I've got my sound on. And let's play. Have we got audio?
Yeah, no reason why the simple shapes of story can't be fed into computers. They are beautiful shapes. This is the GI axis, good fortune, ill fortune. Sickness and poverty down here, wealth and boisterous good health up there. Here's the very middle. Now, this is the BE axis. B stands for beginning. E stands for electricity. Now, this is an exercise in relativity, really. It's the shape of the curves of what matters and not their origins. So we'll start a little above average. Is why get a depressing person? We'll start... The whole thing, we call this story Man in Hole, but it needn't be about a man, and it needn't be about somebody getting into a hole. But it's just a good way to remember it. Somebody gets into trouble, gets out of it again. People love that story. They never get sick of it. All right. Not copyrighted. Another story, also a beautiful curve and easily fed into a computer. called Boy Gets Girl, but it needn't be that. Just a way to remember it. Start on an average day, average person, not expecting anything to happen a day like any other. Find something wonderful, just loves it. Oh, God damn it. Got it back again. People like that. Now, these are beautiful curves, and this gets a little complicated. Is computers can now play chess, so I don't know why they can't digest this very difficult curve I'm going to draw for you now. And it so happens that this is the most popular story in our civilization, Western civilization. As we love to hear this story, every time it's retold, somebody makes another $1 million. You're welcome to do it. Now, surprisingly enough, I've said it's depressing. You know, people don't like stories about below average days and people. But we're going to start way down here. Worse than that, who is so low? It's a little girl. What's happened? Her mother has died. Her father has remarried a vile-tempered, ugly woman with two nasty daughters, big daughters. You've heard it. See? Anyway, there's a party at the palace that night. She can't go. She has to help everybody else get ready. She has to stay home. Now, does she sink lower? No. She's a staunch little girl, and she has had the maximum whack from fate, which is the loss of her mother. She can't go any lower than that. Okay, so the fairy godmother comes. Gives her shoes, gives her stocking, gives her mascara. Gives her a means of transportation, goes to the party, dances with the prince, has a swell time. Boring, 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 boring. Now there's a slight inclination to that line as I've drawn it because it takes perhaps 20 seconds, 30 seconds for a grandfather clock to strike 12. Does she wind up at the same level? Of course not. She will remember that dance for the rest of her life. Now, she poops along on this level till the prince comes, the shoe fits. She achieves off-scale happiness.
Excellent video, which I must have watched this at least a dozen times, probably like 20, because I keep showing people. And every time I show it, I watch it myself. There is another more familiar curve, which I think every one of us probably has seen at school. This is the three-act structure. Just for the purpose of this evening, now I meant to say it in the beginning, but I didn't and I forgot. Because we're gonna have a little practice afterwards of actual craft storytelling itself. So this is just to remind us what it means. Act one, setting it up. What is the context? Where is the place? Who's the main protagonist? And what, most importantly, what does he, she, it maybe, desire? It was Kurt Vonnegut who said, you know, your character needs to want something, even if it's a glass of water. And it's just one of those things to keep in mind. The thing that I almost did tonight, and I was like, you know, trying to catch myself out, whether, so this is a journalistic term where we say don't bury the lead, as in don't start with, you know, 300 pages before you actually reach the crux of the story. This is probably one of the most rookie mistakes that every storyteller has to learn to make and then learn to get over. So this is a good thing to keep in mind. By the way, this is declarative learning right now, so it's fine that you don't remember any of this. Crisis and escalating tension is when things get worse. Now, what's really interesting about conflict and tension, for the longest time I was thinking, like, how do you write or how do you create something that has conflict and tension? Now, where does that come from? It took me a little while, it took me £400, to attend a class by this guy. Hall is BAFTA, I don't know if you hear about BAFTA here, but it's, I guess, the equivalent of the Golden Globes in the UK. And so he writes award-winning TV series, and he's a crime fiction novelist. And he says, drama comes from human decision, which I thought was extremely interesting. So if you go back to remembering, we're setting up characters where we say, okay, he or she wants something, I want something. what's stopping me inside from getting to that something? What are outside forces stopping me from reaching my goal and what I want? And what if the next person comes along with his or her desire, which may or may not be compatible with mine, and the outside circumstances and all that? So it can start get quite complicated, but the drama comes from what happens when your character in your story makes a decision and what the consequences are. So when you know that as a simple rule of thumb, it becomes quite clear how a story can progress. And I'm making it sound easy, but well, it is not too hard. It just comes with practice. And the third act, the finale, things get as bad as it can go. But probably the most important thing about finishing a story is leaving everybody in a safe place. Now, it doesn't have to be a happy ending, although classically we prefer happy endings, but a safe place. It's like a stopping point, like the end of a phrase. I'm going to give you one example of actual application of storytelling in design. Just a really, really short idea of how this fits into something like user experience through storytelling. So, two summers ago, I was at a hack day in Spain. Yes, we actually had a hack day in Spain, and we were working underground out of the sun for a whole 8 hours. I don't know why we did it, but we did it. The way it was set up, it was for nonprofits, and it was for local nonprofits. So we had Médecins Sans Frontières, we had Oxfam, and we had these guys who were local to Spain. They were a foundation for primates, basically chimpanzees who have sort of been captured, trained for film and movies, which is very cruel to the animals because they don't socialize well with humans. They end up with really complex issues like that lead to self-mutilation and things like that. It's not really nice. And so anyway, this foundation came to us and said, we don't know what to do with the website, as you can see. It has a long way to go. I don't know how well you can see that. But basically, okay, so we were 20 people and it was a massive hack day team. I was like, okay, what do we do? Oh, well, let's do the sensible thing. Let's categorize all the content and figure out what's most important, right? There was so much information on this site that we end up using the floor. And even then, this was not the incomplete site. So you're supposed to have a solution by the end of the day because it was a competition. By midday, we had nothing, only CDs on the floor, basically. And so there were two user experience folks on this team, and there was me and another guy. And it's like, no, we need to stop looking at this and just go for the bits that mean most important, most meaningful. Can we tell a story what we have? And so we basically decided to charge ahead and say, okay, what's the most important element if we were to tell a story of this foundation? Not hard, it was the chimpanzees. And so these were our wireframes, these were stickies, and we started with an idea of a mobile first content design, just like simply what would it look like and what would it look like when it expanded. And so we had an art director on the team and he basically did that with 10 minutes work. Probably not the most pretty at this point in time, but the information was interesting. So instead of having all this mass information about the foundation, we had the chimp, we had where did he come from? So why was he here? So what it does is that particular text highlights the situation, the environmental issue, and all the sort of political issue around chimps, you know, what happens to them, and therefore explaining why the foundation needs to exist. And the next part down the bottom says, where is he now? It actually talks about the foundation and the work. So everything, every bit of information around the foundation is now told through a story of the individual chimpanzees. And you can see that the clarity that you can get the moment you do this kind of approach. And so this is like a mobile version that we did, which is really simple. This site is still in progress. The guys loved the concept so much that they still worked on it in their own free time. So it's not completed yet. In any case, this is just one example where a storytelling element can come to play and help you bring clarity in your design, in designing information. Another brief, really, really brief part about user experience. Most of the user experience tasks that we do fall into two categories. It's usually either research or design. I may be oversimplifying it a little bit. But if you look at the activities that we do, every single bit of this component can benefit from sort of storytelling perspective and storytelling themes. So in research, we listen to customers. So we have varying tools. Maybe it's interviews, maybe it's ethnography, maybe it's through data, through analytics. But there are certain tools which in particular, and especially that are getting recognition, like well, customer stories, obviously you can get them from interviews and ethnography, but job stories are a particular type of story, and what happens is that you have an interview with a customer and you figure out their perspective by doing sort of a detective method, so reverse engineering their logic up to the point where they make a decision. So that is job stories in particular, particularly interesting. In this particular area between research and design is where we have most the tools that we're most familiar with. Personas, user journeys, scenarios. They're really familiar names to those of us who are working user experience. And this is because they exist as models. So basically what happens in user experience is you are retelling the story from the customer perspective. So retelling from the research into design so that you can do a retell of the story from inside for where you want to be, from as a source of the design. And through here is where it gets supremely complicated. You can use storytelling in content, you can use it through the visual side, you can use it through just a voice and tone, or even thematic material. So there are plenty of spaces in sort of a whole user experience, a whole spectrum user experience process where storytelling fits. This is where my little tiny little book we'll be focusing on is practically going through this entire cycle. In any case, this evening so far, we've had three working examples. I gave you an example in UX design, a practical method of how to fix a sink in France, and the fact that I was able to tell you two stories in the presentation. I'm not sure if you clocked that. The possibilities are infinite. And so here, I'm only going blah, blah, blah about one particular aspect of storytelling. But it's up to you where you think it can fit in the work that you do. Are you an educator? Do you need to communicate messages to your colleagues? How are you going to do it? Some stories are a good way, and it's a matter of figuring out how it fits. So, the rest of this evening, we're going to try. The way this is going to work, there's a reason why the tables are arranged this way. Hey, we're designers. We think about these things. What I would love to do is for you to pair up with one person. It can be a person you already know, it doesn't really matter. What's going to happen is we're going to have a little series of exercises. I'll give you a minute of thinking time. Actually, let me just skip to a slide so you know what I'm talking about. I'm going to skip this, and I'll come back to it. This is bad planning on my part. Whoops. So you're going to tell a story. In the first instance, let's make it a fairy tale. It should be really easy. You can retell Cinderella if you like. So partner up with someone next to you. I'll give you 1 minute thinking time so that you can reflect on how you want to tell the story. And then the first person, so decide who's the first person to tell the story. Storyteller A tells the story for 3 minutes. Time's up, I'll tell you. You switch. Second person tells story to person to first person. Does that make sense? Yes?
Yeah.
Up to you. Up to you. If you want to tell the same story because you're convinced that you can tell it better, by all means. And then we have 1 minute of a sort of review time, thinking time, and then we go on to the next thing. Is that clear? So can we make sure that you have friends? Can you find a friend? Wait, don't start yet. Woo! I heard stories starting. Wait. We're going to do it together. 1 second. I just really want to know whether I can get 100 people to tell stories together. So this is kind of experiment in itself. I'm going to have my timer ready. Okay. You all right? Okay. I don't know. In case I'm breaking some rules or something. Okay, remember, beginning, middle, end. Setting it up, the obstacles, the finale. Keep the structure in mind. A story, even in 3 minutes, needs to have these elements. Okay, another thing. What's driving your story? Is it a plot, the character, or a question? So, question probably wouldn't apply to tonight, but if you're doing something like a factual site, questions to apply. Ask me later. Plot, the circumstance, person, if it's character-driven, and issue-driven if it's a question. So this may apply later. We'll see. Okay, so your favorite fairy tale or fable? 1 minute thinking time. Silence, please. I'm going to time it, and I will tell you when thinking time is up. Time's up. Okay, so you've decided who's going to tell the story first in your team? Team of two? All right? Okay, ready. So 3 minutes to tell your fairy tale or fable. Time starts now. Time's up. Stop. Okay, how'd you go? Alright, so, alright, let's do the switch. Person B tells person A, sorry. For whatever reason, I have an Irish accent right now. Okay, so ready? 3 minutes? Try and make your characters real. Go. Time's up. Alright. Yoo-hoo. Okay, who told a natural story? Who told a natural story? No. Oh, I don't know, as in you didn't just have a conversation. Excellent, thank you. Thank you for trying. So, as I went around, someone was telling to me, oh, you should have told us this earlier. Or someone else was saying, oh, I have no idea which one I should tell. The problem with practicing the craft of storytelling is today, what we're trying to do is create a safe space for you to test with somebody. Just the one person next to you, you might see them again because it's Chattanooga. But I'm sorry, that I didn't mean it in a bad way. It's nice. But it's great that you can have a place where you can recognize people by their first names. It's excellent. I can't do that where I live, you know? So, but here it is where you're saying, this is a safe space, try it. Don't be scared, because if you are scared, there will be lesser opportunities unless you make them yourself. And it doesn't matter, there's no right or wrong. You can only get better the more you practice. So, this one is probably easier or harder. Tell your favorite joke. Okay, oh yeah. So we're going to have 2 minutes thinking time, or maybe less, depending on how I see people are going, because sometimes it's hard to decide which joke you want to tell. But the story time is short, 2 minutes each, and then we're going to have a little review time. And with jokes in particular, rhythm and pace. It's the same with every story, but with jokes in particular, rhythm and pace. So every sentence, more or less, try to move the story forward, or try to show more of the character. All right? I'm going to go back here. Are you ready? Okay, just have a little bit of thinking time. Quiet thinking time. Oh, you're laughing. That's good. I haven't worked out how to use this timer. Okay, so person A, first person, wherever you are, your joke starts now. 2 minutes, go. All right, time's up. Stop. Whoops. Okay, switch. Ready? 2 minutes for person two. Person number two, start now. Time's up. How'd you like that? Was it fun? I don't know if you're having fun. It's funny because I think the first round of jokes was funnier because more people were laughing. I don't know what happened there. Yeah? I don't know. Okay. So, maybe just one last thing, because it's nice to finish well. Jokes are fun, but I think to tell a real story, much like what I was trying to do early on in the beginning of this talk. I'm sorry, I realize that I'm talking really fast and I'm very jet lagged, so every other sentence may not make sense, but I think you're getting the gist. So, telling a story about what happens to you. Now, this is interesting, a little harder. It's a difficult scale of difficulty. In this particular one, pay attention to describing feelings and reactions, whether it's yours or the person involved in the story. Okay, so this may take a bit of thinking time. Free reign, like do whatever you want. Make it up if you want. Okay, so let's just have 1 minute of thinking time. So you can decide, both of you decide what you want to say. Okay, so first person telling the story, you have 5 minutes. Go. How did you like that? Was it easier than you thought it was?
It got easier.
It got easier? That's my point. If there's one thing you could take away from tonight, not about plugging things in sinks and stuff and wet socks and all that, it gets easier with practice, and that is all there is to it, to storytelling. And thank you very much for participating tonight. More beer? No. Right.
And then MLK's I Have a Dream speech.
Yeah.
So wondering if you've seen that, because it's less curvy, it's more, we start from here, and then we go to the next dot, and then we show, you know, what is, what could be, what is, what could be.
They're very, they are many, many shapes of stories. So like, so depending on who you ask, they are either three types of stories, or 53. So really, this is very culture-centric. It's very industry-centric. And so the one reason why I decided not to go there is because it's just a huge hole, and you could end up with 153 different types of stories. And then it becomes one of those things that you stop wanting to learn because it's too complicated. I mean, there is no accident that we have oral histories before we had written histories. And so telling stories is naturally human. Listening to stories is also naturally human. It's just that I think sometimes we don't really get the time to practice like we do. So I hope that, if anything, you get find more time to tell stories to other people, because all of you are unique and all of you have stories to tell. All right, thank you.